In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today we're going to be talking about, I think, a very interesting cultural change that has happened as a result of social media. We've talked about social media multiple times here on the podcast.
We have.
But this weekend, I think, brought, to me, something kind of to the forefront about social media and how it's changed how we deal with things. Mm-hmm. And I think more so than any of the other similar events that have happened over the last couple of years. And what I'm speaking of course, is the tragic accident in Southern California.
Yeah.
Where Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and I believe seven other people lost their lives in a helicopter accident.
Yeah, I remembered hearing news that there was a helicopter crash. I didn't hear about it, about Kobe and his daughter being in it until probably about 4 or 5 hours later.
Well, that's interesting because I heard about it fairly immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the reason why I heard about it fairly immediately is because what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
Now, I promised 2 weeks ago that I would have no football talk until after February 2nd.
Right.
And I'm kind of going to keep that promise still. But I will mention the fact that yesterday I was watching the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
Because the Pro Bowl does happen between the NFC-AFC championship game and the Super Bowl.
Right, right.
It happens during that weekend. So I was watching the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
And it was on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN, of course, being a sports network. So I saw and heard about it almost immediately after news was available for it because it was there on ESPN.
Yeah, totally.
Moreover, the players at the Pro Bowl heard about it even before the game had started.
Wow.
And as a result, there were members of a member of one of the teams, the NFC team specifically,
mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson, who is the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks,
mm-hmm.
Known for being a very openly kind of religious person.
Okay,
actually gathered many of the players from the NFC team together and had a prayer before the game, as a result of them getting the information, them trying to assimilate the information that this guy, for those who don't know who Kobe Bryant is, I'm a little bit shocked, or who Kobe Bryant was, we should say properly now.
Right.
Even somebody, I know you're not necessarily a big basketball fan.
I never was, but you always heard about who he was.
Yeah.
It was crazy because the biggest part about what I remember is, because I never really paid attention to basketball at all, but I remember there was a lot of jealousy that was going along when he got in. Because he went straight into the NBA right the hell out of high school.
Yeah, right from high school.
Straight out. 18, boom, he's in.
Yeah.
Like, which is, I remembered hearing about that.
Which is, I mean, that would definitely have some people have some jealousy because he was a transcendent player.
Yeah.
And
the guy was insanely good. He held his own in the game. Now
multiple championships for the Lakers with him and Shaquille O'Neal on the team.
Yeah.
The Lakers got multiple championships.
Oh, they were, yeah. Shaq and Kobe were like the dream.
And this
they
is
a dream pair, like for.
I'm glad you didn't say
10
I'm,
years.
I'm glad you didn't say dream team because there was a dream team in basketball.
There was a dream team.
Yes, I remember that very much.
But they were the guys to beat. They were the guys to beat.
They definitely were, and a great combination between the two of them on the court. But Kobe is one of those people that is he transcends the sport that he's in. Like Shaquille O'Neal transcends that sport. He's not. I mean, while he is a basketball player, he has done so much more and is so much in the public consciousness.
Yeah.
So much more than what a normal basketball player is. Examples of football players that have done the same type of thing. Way back in the day, Joe Namath.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his record, as far as wins and losses record.
Yeah.
His completion percentage rating, the number of touchdowns he threw, the number of yards he threw for.
Yeah.
Joe Namath is not that good a quarterback.
Right.
But Joe Namath, because of the things that he did as far as the commercials that he was involved with and the endorsements he was involved with, he transcended the sport of football. He became a character of his own. And that's what's made him an enduring icon for people who like football.
Yeah.
People know who Joe Namath is.
Well,
he was involved in so much more than just being a basketball player.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying is this is a guy that kind of transcended just what the sport was for him. I mean, again, football example. I'm the big football guy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the name Joe Namath.
Yes, I do know the name Joe Namath.
And you kind of know a little bit
about
it.
I know
him.
That he was a football player. I know he was, as far as I knew, he was a great player. And isn't there a trophy named after him or something
there's
like that?
There's no trophy named after him, but Joe Namath was most famous for guaranteeing a win in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And he did it. He guaranteed it, and he won.
Yeah.
How about Johnny Unitas? That name familiar to you?
I've heard the name, but I have no reference. Yeah.
Not to the level of Joe Namath.
Right.
How about Terry Bradshaw?
Absolutely Terry Bradshaw. Okay. Terry Bradshaw now.
Again.
He's still doing stuff.
Again, this is a guy that transcends just being football, because you're the non-football guy. So if I'm
I was just
out
thinking more stuff like about the more philanthropic stuff that he did.
Who, Kobe or?
Kobe. Yes. But other people that do that too, like crossing over into pop culture as a sports icon is not exactly easy to do. Normally you're just known into that. Like, I would say that people like Kaepernick, regardless of how he was as a player, is someone that's crossed over to mean more than just his football career.
Yes.
People like, obviously, Michael Jordan, and up to a certain point, I would consider Richard Sherman to be that as well. Especially being the fact that he used a bad boy image, and one of the major things that he was doing back when he was in the Seahawks, I don't know if he's still doing it because he's not really the same type of player.
I can tell you what he's
doing.
Back
when
he
was breaking the rules, he was matching his wasn't he matching his fines with charity donations? So he would be fined, pay that fine, and then pay that equal fine in a charity donation as well?
That I'm unsure of. I do know
I know he's become a better sportsman with his contract, hasn't he?
His contract is such that he set up his contract to where he only basically got his incentive pays and his incentive stuff.
If he accomplishes certain goals, if he hit certain things.
So his base contract was actually quite low, but he put a bunch of incentive stuff in there, betting kind of on himself to do good. And in fact, he got some of his – he was elected to the Pro Bowl this year.
Yeah.
And so that unlocked like $2 million for his salary, because that was part, that was one of his step-ups. Right now, currently, Richard Sherman is involved with a whole lot of different charitable organizations, including a juvenile detention center where he's trying to help rehabilitate, work with juvenile delinquents and juvenile criminals. He also went and paid off the lunch debt for an entire – school districts
worth
of school.
He just did that
last
year, didn't he?
Yeah.
I remember hearing about that.
And there's some of that transcendence. And he's actually helped bring some of that culture to the team. For instance, I can't talk about that. I'll talk about that later.
Okay.
I don't want to...
Like I said, we're going into general sports here. But yeah, he became a bit of... he became a cultural icon.
Well, and again, staying with the football thing.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning is an example.
Okay.
In fact, his brother Eli just retired from football.
Wow.
But
I could see that. I mean, other ones. I'm thinking of other ones that hit on a. I'll say it. They hit on a negative.
Michael Vick.
O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson.
Pete Rose.
These are people that in many ways transcend just the sport that they were in.
Yeah.
They become something more within our culture than just an athlete in the sport.
Absolutely.
Part of the reason that we're bringing up Kobe, obviously, is because it just happened.
Right. It happened. This happened. We're
recording on Monday.
Recording this on Monday. This literally happened yesterday.
He was 41 years old when he died, which means that he is a Xennial.
Yeah. He was born in 78.
He was a Xennial. He was one of us that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And the key to what you just said, the fact that we're recording this on Monday, mm-hmm. y'all are going to hear it on Thursday.
Yeah.
But the fact this happened on Sunday and we're talking about it in this way, we're actually a little bit slow on talking about this.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I was watching the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They were already discussing it at the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And the different teams had... When they did certain things, like there was a sack in the Pro Bowl,
yeah,
they had a celebration where all the defensive linemen got up and they pretended like they were holding basketballs, kind of stepped to the left and the right, and then fired off a jump shot.
All of them were in a ring together. Great.
There was a receiver who scored, and he went and did a dunk on the goalpost and did a spin in the air doing the dunk, trying to emulate and kind of give respect and honor to
Kobe.
But the fact that this happened the same day, within hours of finding out that he was dead, and this is kind of what I wanted to talk about today, is the fact that we have seen in our lives, because of social media, this quick change in reaction to, or this long change, but this able to quickly react to the death of a celebrity. And now, celebrities are always going to get more attention when they die than any normal person. We understand
totally,
that.
Yeah.
It's just the way of things, because celebrities, the very nature of being a celebrity, people feel, the normal people feel more connected to you in mass. You're important to a large number of people. Whereas if any, you know, if anybody that you personally know dies, it is important to you. It's very important to you. It may be important to the people around you, but not necessarily on such a large scale basis. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
And so the attention is not going to be there in the same way. I saw somebody, a friend of yours and kind of a Facebook friend of mine and a listener of the show.
Yeah.
He had posted something about it, and on his post there was two people kind of arguing about it. One saying, well, you know, I don't know why there's so much attention being paid to the Kobe thing, because, I mean, there's so many other people that die, you know, these military people that die. And that's a very common one that comes up. Like, we don't raise these people up and pay as much attention to these people. I mean, three American firefighters died in Australia over the last,
I remember that making the news.
Yeah, but
But
did it have the level of coverage that Kobe has had? No. And part of that has to do with it had coverage. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Have coverage. It was important.
But not to the level and to the point of what has happened with Kobe. And part of that has to do with the fact that, yes, when you attain a certain level of celebrity, there is this kind of, I don't know, ideology that your life has in many ways more meaning and more whatever than other people. It doesn't. I'm not saying that it does have more meaning,
right?
But it's viewed that way. Plus, people are more likely to click on something talking about a more famous person than they are going to click on something talking about a less famous person.
Yeah, I that's true. It's because I could get into some things that I'm pretty sure that people – I can get into some opinions I'm pretty sure that there are some people don't want to hear.
Yeah, I understand that.
And I'll leave that alone. I'll put that to bed. But I'm not a fan of flocking to that argument, to the military argument or to that argument as a crutch. To be completely honest, like, I see more instances where the entirety of traffic is stopped because of a shot police officer doing their job.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they don't deserve that, but just because this person happens to be a cultural icon, this guy for a day or two is going to get a certain amount of honor, a certain amount of coverage. They're going to mention him. He was a cultural icon, and he deserves that recognition. He was that for 20 years.
That is the thing. There are so many more people who – and that's where I think that using that argument can kind of be a little bit – I'm thinking I'm feeling the same way that you are. It's a little bit of a difficult argument because, again, we have a mutual friend who was in the military.
Yes.
And while in the military was over in combat zones.
Yes.
And luckily he came back perfectly. He came back physically okay, but he's still alive. He's still with us.
Figuring it out, you know, I'm very proud of him too.
He's somebody that we both care an awful lot about.
Absolutely.
But we both knew that when he was over there, there was the possibility that he wouldn't come back.
Yes.
And if that was the case, there was a decent number of people that would have, you know, if he had not come back, if something had happened to him, there was a decent number of people that would have been there mourning the loss of an amazing human being.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be the person on national media because as much as he would have meant to us, and he still means to us as a friend, but the loss of him would have meant to us.
Yeah.
As much as it would have taken a piece of us with it. It's only friends, family, and the people that really know him. When you are the level of celebrity that somebody like Kobe Bryant was and is still, even after his death, like I said, you mean so much to so many people. They feel connected to you in a way that isn't real except for to them personally. And that's why the attention comes. But like I said, to get back to kind of the original point, the original impetus that made me want to talk about this, just the fact that with our social media, with the way that these things have changed, this immediacy of our culture, we're able to know these things, find out about these things, and respond to these things in such a quick fashion. I remember as we were growing up, as we were kids, when somebody would have a tragic accident and die, a celebrity would, first of all, it would take a bit of time to know anything that really happened.
Yeah.
And then it would be a long time before you heard from people about it. It would be, you know, some days, weeks, sometimes even months before you really had responses. And now you're getting responses. During the Pro Bowl game, the NBA commissioner tweeted out a response. You had responses from so many different people on so many levels of media that were immediately via something like Twitter being able to have responses and commentary on this tragedy. Whereas, like, I don't know, what can you recall from our childhood? I'm saying anytime between our birth till we were about 18 years old. What can you recall as one of the biggest celebrity deaths? I can think of one that was like,
well, I mean, there's
a real transcending one.
There's a ton of them that happened in recent years.
Well, in recent years, I'm talking pre the heavy onslaught of the internet. I'm talking while we were kids. There's one that really stands out as a big one.
The only one that I can think of is probably Princess Diana.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, and I think I was like maybe 14, 15 years old.
So you were a teenager. Yeah,
I was young.
I'm a couple years older than you. So yeah, it was near the end of my childhood.
I remember it being a big thing.
It was huge, but it was days and days before everybody had kind of the news mentioned it. The news talked about it.
Yeah.
But before people were making responses and before you could see the responses,
yeah.
The way the news cycle worked then, it took days and days sometimes before you saw anything, before any of that stuff actually came out.
True, true, true. Yeah. No, I remembered, like, my own parents were just like affected.
Yeah.
It seemed so weird.
Well, it was definitely, again, we're talking about a transcendent celebrity and somebody that was beyond more than just having been the princess of our former, colonial masters.
Yeah, for right.
But it was a big deal, huge deal. I remember people watching stuff over and over again, watching the news for a couple days on end, crying, mm-hmm. crying about somebody that's literally not connected to our society, but they had a personal connection to and a personal feeling for. The simple fact, though, is it took multiple days before you had all the responses about it. Whereas with the difference in our culture now, you get that response immediately. And I remember the first place that I saw it, other than on my social media, other than, of course, seeing it on the ESPN, was one of the different – it was on Facebook. It was one of the different businesses that I have on my Facebook. In fact, it was The Cave.
Oh, really?
The Cave here, The Cave in Sacramento.
Yeah.
It was one of the first ones I saw that posted something. And at first I was like, is this a hoax? Is this a joke? Because you see many of that. You see hoaxes and jokes sometimes about celebrities that have passed. And I had to, you know, do some research on it. And it was just, you know, scary. I mean, I heard it on TV too, but at the same time, I wanted to make sure that it was something that was real, that wasn't just a hoax thing. And just the idea that we can find these things out so immediately, so fast, and respond to them in such a fast way. It's like, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if it makes it so that we don't get enough time to process the loss of somebody, or and we're just responding to it immediately. It's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's very weird. And so it was kind of something to kind of bring up and talk about, especially again, given the fact that Kobe is, and again, was, it's hard for me to get the words
right. It's fresh information. You're taking the time to process it, man.
He was somebody of our generation.
Yeah.
Of our upbringing and growing. And, you know, you're right. The fact that he went right into basketball, into professional basketball right out of high school, he was that kind of a talent.
Yeah.
You know, talents like that definitely don't come along every day. And then to have the career that he had, he won an Academy Award for a short film that he had done. I think it was partially animated or fully animated, that had to do with basketball, but also had to do with like life and growing. And
that's crazy, man.
The guy won an Academy Award. And then also to find out that, you know, the circumstances around it, right? Mm-mm. Where what he was doing, where he was going. This makes it even worse,
no,
man.
No, what was, well,
first of all, you know, that his daughter was with him, his 13-year-old daughter.
Yes.
He was on his way apparently to go coach a basketball team. One of the other people on the thing with him was another student from the basketball team and one of their parents. He was on his way because he was giving back to the thing he loved by coaching either a high school or junior high or something like that team. He was on his way to do that.
That's heartbreaking, man. I didn't know that.
That's just kind of, you know, maybe speaks to the character of who he was as a person.
Yeah.
And what he was trying to still be involved in the thing he loved so much. and just that's, I mean, that's, I don't have words.
Dude,
I don't
have words. That's not even, I can't even think.
And so
I can't even process that. That really sucks, man.
It does. It does. It is something that definitely brings it home. I know that it's been 3 years now. I think 3 years now since maybe two. I'll have to check the exact date because it's been a difficult kind of mental juggling in my head to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
That one of my friends from high school, guy that was he was at my wedding. He wasn't in the wedding party. I don't know if you remember. I'll try to describe him after we're done recording here so that you can maybe remember him. But he was one of my friends from school,
mm-hmm.
Same age as me, and he had a various number of health issues, and he had kind of let himself go and not taken care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember finding out on social media that he had passed away.
Man.
And it's one of those things that kind of really sets it home with you. You know, I know we're getting older. We're at that point. We're starting to get older.
Yeah.
We're frustrated with all the younger people, so that automatically makes us, older. We can understand that. When you see somebody driving a car and you think, they are not old enough to drive a car, you know you're old at that point. You know you're getting that way.
Yep.
But to have somebody that's the exact same age as you, and you still think, even though there's that thing that I'm getting old, you still think you're still fairly young. You have a lot of life left ahead of you. And to have somebody your same age pass away like that, it's definitely sobering. I mean, my father, who's in his 70s at this point, he's involved with his high school, and they do yearly now, they're doing reunions. Every single year they're doing a reunion. And then in between that, almost monthly, they have a luncheon where all the people from that year of the high school meet up at different places to have lunch. Well, not all of them, but whoever can make it meet up to have lunch. And I've jokingly told him, the reason that they're doing this every year now and the reason that they meet up as often as possible is because they don't know who's going to be able to be alive still to make the next meeting because they're in their 70s. They're getting to that point where every time you meet up for something, it's the first thing you go through is, all right, so who died in the last year? Because it's a little macabre, I will admit, but it's kind of the way of things. Once you get to a certain age, you kind of expect you're going to hear it. I expected when I got to my 70s, I would start hearing about my friends passing away. I didn't expect it when I was in my mid-30s, late 30s.
Yeah.
That becomes more of a like, oh, damn.
Yeah, it starts to hit. I've had a few friends go in the last couple of years that was...
Around your age?
Around my age, yeah. There was a guy I knew that I went to high school with that passed away, and it was just in his sleep.
Wow.
There was a coworker I knew who was... I'm 37, coming up on 38. There was a coworker I knew who was 32, 33 years old, passed away in his sleep.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that one.
Yeah, it can get jarring. But I mean, I don't know. Let's bring it back to what was going on with him. So he was, I mean,
This is your buddy that died recently. Is that what you're talking about?
I wanted to bring it back to Kobe? I wanted to bring tech. Yeah.
Back to Kobe. Sorry.
Yeah. We could get down this rabbit hole a little bit too far, man, and bring down everybody's
Let's bring it back to Kobe.
just knowing that, like I said, my information, the information I have on the guy is very, very mild, but it's something. And, he was definitely different. Most of what I remember about Kobe more than anything is the controversy behind, the controversy behind the fanfare. And I'm not going to get into the more controversial stuff that was, because there was a dark side to all that. Let's just leave that alone.
There was some women and some things like that.
Yeah, there was. Let's just leave that alone for a minute. But just what he became more famous for is not just being a player, though.
No,
he wasn't just a basketball player. No, why he was more important.
And that's the thing is, again, he really
and he was
did,
incredible at it, but he was he was more than that, a lot more than that.
He did transcend the one thing he was known for.
Yeah,
and there are those special people in each of those things they're more than just the one thing they became famous for, the one thing that they do.
Yeah,
and that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
When somebody has that. But at the same time, it's even more sad when we lose those people.
For sure. Absolutely.
So, All right, we're going to take a break now.
Okay.
Especially because I think we've talked this as much as we need to.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half here, we're going to take a little bit lighter tone. I want to warn everybody right now because we're coming to the break. The second half, we are finally going to have the discussion, Mike. You've had me wait, and I've waited.
Uh-huh.
We are finally going to have the discussion. We are going to talk about The Rise of Skywalker.
Uh-oh.
This will have spoilers in it because Mike has already seen it.
Yep.
Mike has seen it finally.
Finally got to see it.
If you have not seen it, don't listen to the second half of this. Wait until you see it, then come back and listen to it.
Yep.
If you have seen it, please enjoy what we have to discuss about it, because I'm opening up the being the guy that has more of the Star Wars knowledge, I'm opening mm-hmm. up Mike to ask basically anything that he wants.
Yep.
And I'm going to talk about the things that I loved, the things I didn't like as much, some of my initial reactions, and then hopefully wrap up the discussion of it. And that means I've hit all the Star Wars movies to talk about, which will make me happy. A little bit of completion there. So please, again, if you don't want to hear about The Rise of Skywalker, don't Absolutely. Listen to the second half. If you do, come with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
All right.
Again, before the break, it was only a moment ago, I warned people, this is going to be talking about Star Wars.
Yep.
It's going to be talking about The Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
I may even throw a little bit of Mandalorian in there.
Okay, Mandalorian, I don't know.
That's okay.
Okay.
But I just, again.
I seen it. Well, not final, Mandalorian. I seen.
The Rise of Skywalker.
I seen Skywalker.
Final warning. Now I'm going to get into it.
So all right,
saw,
what's up?
You saw The Rise of Skywalker.
I did see The Rise of Skywalker.
What was your opinion on watching it?
Personally, I loved the hell out of it.
Very big movie.
There was
Huge
a lot.
Movie.
Okay. Yeah. Getting into details.
Yes.
There was a lot of information that started out immediately ready to go.
So
Boom.
Fast.
There was no, just like, it was immediately pivotal stuff is happening right at the get go, right after the crawl, just done.
I mean,
it's like, okay, that's where we're at. All right. Get ready.
The
Here's
amount
what's
of
going down.
You get the space pan. And then, yep. boom, action. And yep. then just nonstop
and it starts with,
action.
Actually, did all three of these ones start with, like, full-fledged fights that included Kylo Ren? Did the second one start like that, too?
Technically...
Because it does kind of... Every one of them kind of start in the middle of the action at some point. But yeah, there's I mean, always something yeah, they kind of builds up, like...
They all basically start in the middle with a bunch of action happening. When the first one started on Jakku with... Poe Dameron getting
that
to Luke Skywalker. The second one started with they're leaving the planet that they've been on, the rebels have been on,
yeah.
because the First Order found their base, was going to destroy it with the Starkiller weapon, but the Starkiller weapon got destroyed. So the First Order's fleet shows up and is orbital bombarding
wow.
their base.
Yeah, that's actually really, that's very much an echo of Empire.
And
from the start, well, I mean, there was a lot more with
there's the thing is there's so many eight, so many all of it are echoes kind of the other movies.
Yeah,
it's a cyclical thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And remember my description of when we talked about the Star Wars movies leading up to Rise of Skywalker, I had talked about the fact that we were you had to look at it as though it was an opera or a concerto where there's waves in it, there's echo
yeah,
things
sure.
in different areas of it, and you see a lot of those echoes. The biggest thing that was really interesting about the start of this movie, one, the opening crawl. I did not like the opening crawl.
It was such a okay. So that was kind
the
of a hokey cheesy
the,
thing to
yeah,
start.
The writing in the opening,
the dead speak, like
yes,
what
the dead speak. That's just
the
like
dead speak.
What the hell? You're putting
okay,
that
yeah,
in my opening crawl, but
only,
at the same time,
yeah. There's only one thing that I didn't like about the opening of the film.
Yeah,
there was just like. Guess what? Palpatine's here again. Like, you didn't have any, like, there was no reveal. There was just like, Palpatine's here and he's amassed a fleet.
Well,
and Kylo Ren's looking for Palpatine. Okay, go. Just like, what?
Yeah, the fact that it jumped you into the middle of the action, but at the same time.
Like, no reveal, no nothing. Just like,
but,
done.
But at the same time, that does somewhat echo the original source material. Because you gotta realize, this was originally George Lucas's take on the Buck Rogers type of serials. which is why it was based on that kind of Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon. It was based on those type of serials.
Right, right, right.
So to have something just pop out of nowhere is actually not that outside of the way those things happen.
I mean, do you excuse it because it feels like that kind of a throw? It made it, you know what? You're right. It makes it feel like less of a story, like a full story development, and a lot more like a, it made it feel a lot more like a, how do I say it? It made it feel a lot more like a episode of the week, adventure.
Episodic.
Yes.
Which is kind of the point. Which,
I mean, it is episodic. The series is episodic, but it just never felt like it was to that degree. They did that without making it feel like that.
Yeah.
There was always a time period in between, but when they jump 20 years between episode one and episode two, it doesn't feel like that. It's this almost neutral, almost peaceful time where shit starts to hit the fan after everything started.
There's some hefty jumps in between between Empire and Return of the Jedi. There's a hefty time jump in there.
Right.
And there's a lot of things that happen. I mean, you jump in there and suddenly, out of the blue, Luke is a freaking Jedi master that's made his own lightsaber.
Well, sort of, but you know that there's an amount of time that's happened.
Yeah, well, there's an amount of time that's happened between episode 8 and episode 9. There is a decent amount of time that's happened.
There is, but so it throws me off with the fact that, let's see, the third one is
Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
If we're looking at Jedi, yes, there has been time that Luke has taken to train to become a Jedi.
And funny enough, originally shot, and you can find the original shot of it, there's an original shot where he's in a cave on Tatooine, and he's finishing the building of his green lightsaber before putting it into R2.
Oh, cool.
So there's an original shot of that.
So they have a build-up to that.
But it got cut out of the film because they didn't think it felt right with the pacing. Instead, they just go right into...
And I can understand that, but at the same time, this is a side piece of information almost. It's almost like let's consider it a side quest, right? It's somewhat of a side quest because the idea is they need to go rescue Han. Han is still technically alive in the Carbonite. We need to go get his ass.
Yeah.
Because they had done that. It was a major plot point in Empire.
Yeah.
But it made sense because it was a side quest that was part of
the
mob and all that stuff that
and
the fact that when you end
The Last Jedi does not lead into all of a sudden Palpatine is back. It does not lead into that in any way. Whereas you're right.
Right.
It did lead into Lando. At the end of Empire, Lando is leaving the medical frigate where Luke is getting a new robotic hand.
Yeah.
Lando is leaving in the Falcon with Chewie.
Right.
To go try and find wherever Han's at.
Right, exactly. And so interesting, you get that.
I mean, interesting.
You get that story build up. Also, the opening scene has nothing to do with, like... It technically has nothing to do with Vader. You have Boba Fett, who was there during the capturing of Han Solo.
The opening scene of you're talking about Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, the opening scene of Jedi.
You're missing the opening scene of Return of the Jedi. You're going straight to Tatooine. There is actually a scene before they get on Tatooine with R2 and 3PO heading towards Jabba's palace. There's a scene of the Imperial shuttle, an Imperial shuttle going to the second Death Star, and Darth Vader coming off the Imperial shuttle and talking to the people at the second Death Star, and then saying that the Emperor is on his way. Then it cuts to 3PO and
R2. Okay,
yeah.
So
it's a scene. That's often forgotten because you think the action starts on Tatooine,
right?
But in fact, the action starts the whole movie starts with an Imperial shuttle heading to, which is actually, I think, a great reveal.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a great reveal because later the rebels heading to the forest moon of Endor are on an Imperial shuttle.
Right.
And notice I said the forest moon of Endor. There's a reason I said the forest moon of Endor, and I'll get to that as we're talking about Rise of Skywalker.
Well, doesn't that become a major plot point in...
Yes and no.
In 9.
But anyway, that's why you see that shuttle that Vader is on, and then later you see the rebels on the same type of shuttle, so that you've already been given the visual cues that's an Imperial shuttle.
Right.
When you see it later, it's kind of a neat little filmmaking trick. But it makes it so that the audience can easily identify things.
Yeah.
But anyway, So yeah, the opening crawl, back to the Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Opening crawl is a bit much. And then you're right. It does kind of jump into that action of Kylo Ren looking for wherever the heck Palpatine is. But the opening crawl sets up the fact that that's what Kylo Ren is doing. The frenetic action, though. Okay, the first planet that you see Kylo on, where he's got stormtroopers and he's fighting off a bunch of people wearing weird helmets, and it's kind of a red and black kind of desert or kind of scorched looking planet.
Right.
Do you know what planet that is? Where he finds the Wayfinder, the Sith Wayfinder, the things that that tells him to find
The
planet Exegol. That's actually the planet he's fighting those people on, where he's slashing people with his saber, sticks it into people, buries them in the ground.
The battle, it's a badass scene.
And the movie opens that way, and you're like, okay, this thing's going to be fast paced.
Yeah,
That's Mustafar. Mustafar being the volcano planet where Obi-Wan beats the brand new Darth Vader.
Really?
Turns him into a legless dude.
Cuts off his legs and one of his arms. Yeah. And
Lieutenant Dan's him.
Yeah.
which, by the way, I've heard a new theory on the whole high ground thing.
Right.
You see it in the memes all the time. It's a famous thing. Don't do it, Anakin. I have the high ground.
Yeah.
You underestimate my power. Flips up, chops up. You know what I'm saying? Here's the thing. The new theory that I've heard about this is that Obi-Wan has told Anakin stories about, his past and history. He told him what happened with Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
And he told him that technically Darth Maul had the high ground. And what Obi-Wan do? Flipped over him and was able to kill him.
Right.
Maybe Anakin was thinking he would be able to do the same thing, flip over Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So knew Obi-Wan was able to respond because you're trying to be like me when I was younger, but I'm smarter than what Darth Maul was.
Well, here's my favorite part. You actually pointed this out to me. I pointed it out to you in a meme in episode 6, Luke has the high ground in the fight.
And
the two of them are back and forth. Darth Vader is on the bottom of the staircase. Luke is at the top. Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Yeah.
And once you realize that what he's talking about, they must have moved it into a plot point or something. I think Lucas did it by mistake.
There's another point later where Luke flips up onto a catwalk.
Yeah.
And Vader doesn't even try to go after him. He just throws his lightsaber and cuts the catwalk down. And it's like, I dealt with that before.
Man.
Nope, not going to happen.
No, that's actually a really, like, I don't know if it was.
You don't know, but still, it's awesome.
It's really awesome because it's just a nice little surprise that I don't know if Lucas planned it from the beginning or if it is something that's just like, wait a minute, what if
this happens
because this happened? Because you know, he wrote episode 6 first.
Yes, episode 6 was definitely written
so
first.
So I think it was just a nice surprise. Yeah. It was a really nice surprise to see that. It's just one of those things to be like, cool. Yeah. Like, who cares whether or not it was a mistake? It's just fun to see.
So anyway.
Please, moving forward, we're talking about episode 9, damn it.
So he gets to the planet Exegol. And this is not one that I remember being in any of the legend stuff, even though, yes, I know they are no longer canon. You don't need to tell me, people. Still, they've taken a lot of the stuff from the legends to be able to use and work with. And so, okay.
No, they kind of got to. Well, here's they've the used thing. Some you can pick legend. And choose from what you need to pick and choose.
They can't.
It's not really that big of a deal.
And they've been on. There has been other Sith planets that they've gone to before. In fact, season one or two, I think it's season one, final episode of the. Or final two episodes of the TV show Rebels, the cartoon show Rebels.
Yeah.
They are on a Sith planet where they find Darth Maul, who is still alive at that point. He's been hiding on this Sith planet. Yeah. And then
has he got the spider legs at this point?
No, he's got regular legs at this point, but they're metal.
Oh, wow.
They're metal, but they're regular legs. They find him, and then they also they have a bunch of inquisitors that show up. Imperial inquisitors. They're force sensitives that Palpatine sends out to hunt down Jedi.
Yeah.
And then Vader shows up, and Vader has a final battle with Ahsoka Tano, who was his apprentice in the Clone Wars series. And she isn't for sure who Vader is at that point.
Yeah.
Until his mask gets damaged, and you actually have the voice actor for Anakin in the animated series came back to do the voice, and you get a mixture of James Earl Jones as doing the Vader voice and and Matt Lanter, who's the voice of the of Anakin in the animated series.
Wait, they didn't get Christensen?
No, Christensen was never the voice in the animated series. Just like
Oh, forget the animated series. He was no, Anakin Skywalker.
I know, but he wasn't. But in they kept it consistent with the voice actor from the Clone Wars animated series. It's just like
why did they do that?
Because he was the voice in the animated series, and it was the Rebels is a direct it has direct connection. Ashley okay. Eckstein, who's the voice of Ahsoka Tano, was the voice of Ahsoka Tano in Clone Wars and the voice in Rebels, and so they basically are keeping the same voices that were in the specific mediums. It's like Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan was not voiced by Ewan McGregor in the animated series, in Clone Wars, right. Or in... same with Darth Maul. Darth Maul was not voiced by the same person.
Yeah, but they got McGregor for Obi-Wan.
For the series, yes. They did get McGregor for the series, but that's because...
No, they got... Okay, hold on. I think I'm losing some information. You're talking about the series, you're talking about the...
I'm talking about for the Clone Wars series, the animated series Clone Wars.
Right.
And for the animated series Rebels...
I thought you were talking about another portion of the film.
No.
Okay, never mind. I got lost. Please continue.
You're talking about the where you hear voices.
Yes. There are many multiple voices in many areas.
All three Obi-Wans are in that. All three. Alec Guinness is used.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor is used. And
the guy who does the voice, I forget his name, but the guy who does the voice for the animated, the Clone Wars and the Rebels,
cool.
He also has a moment in there.
Fun.
So does Ashley Eckstein as Ahsoka. However, they only use Hayden Christensen in that for the for when the Anakin voice is used. We'll get to that. Yes, you hear voices of the dead. Because guess what? The dead speak. Anyway, so Kylo goes to this Sith world, which I loved. I loved the whole look of the Sith world at first. The fact that he walks underneath this like floating pyramid thing and has to descend. There's Sith statues everywhere.
Yeah.
You find out, of course, that Snoke was just some kind of a clone type thing.
I like how he walks by the clone pod that has a Snoke body in it.
And just for explanation, this is a Sith world where a bunch of Sith basically worshippers have been living for centuries.
Right.
Since the Sith Empire.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily force sensitive. They just are, because the Sith aren't just force sensitive. The force sensitive ones were in charge of the Empire.
Right.
But there are still people that are adherents to it, believers.
Of course. It's a cult. Essentially.
And the idea being that somehow or another they were able to get Palpatine's body or a body. It may be a cloned body. It may be his original body.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still dead.
Yes.
They just were keeping it in kind of a state of suspended animation, very much like how we hook people up to machines and keep them alive nowadays.
Yeah.
When they're brain dead. Basically,
I love the aesthetic of that.
But he was able to
a machine. He's sentient, but he can't quite do very much.
Quite sentient. His force presence is able to exist within the body, but it can't do anything really.
Right,
because the body is basically dead.
Right,
and so he's there. Palpatine is there. Communicates with Kylo. Kylo goes after. He's heading after Rey.
Right.
You're not sure what. He says to kill her, but like I firmly believe Palpatine told Kylo to go kill her.
Yeah.
Hoping that Rey would kill Kylo.
Right.
And then Rey would hunt him down.
Right.
So then you have the other adventuring things that happen. You have the Falcon doing some nifty flying maneuvers and doing something called light speed skipping. Which is a hell of a thing. You're not supposed to, when you plot a light speed course, you're not supposed to be able to travel through planetary bodies. You're supposed to travel around them, which is why it's so hard to plot a light speed course.
Right.
So
and now they're just kind of skipping, flipping through it back and forth.
Like, whatever. I didn't like it.
Well, wasn't Han credited with doing that before?
He did it. He did something. He didn't do light speed skipping. What he did was he plotted a light speed course into a planet, and then pulled him with a precise calculation, pulled himself out of light speed while in Atmo, which had never been recorded as being done before.
Gotcha.
And apparently, the Millennium Falcon is like made of some kind of super metal. Maybe it's maybe they borrowed from the Marvel universe and made it out of a mixture of vibranium and adamantium. Because the Millennium Falcon can't break. It can basically get beat all to crap and it doesn't break.
Right.
So, you know, you have there's a lot of various misadventures that go on. I don't want to get into detail of all of them.
Right,
I'm just going
to pick
out some of the high points, the points that really stuck with me. I love the bringing in of Lando.
Yes.
When Lando was brought in, it was brought in a very interesting way.
Yeah.
The whole party sequence where they find Lando, they're out that world and they see this big festival and things going on.
Mm-hmm.
It was way too reminiscent for me of the Matrix 2 cave sequence. The cave party.
That's what you thought when you
saw
it?
That's what I thought when I saw it. That's what I felt when I saw it. I was like, really?
Wow. I mean, that's I would consider that to be relatively obscure at this point.
For many people, but for me, it was just like, why are we having this big party festival with these creatures dancing around? This is kind of dumb. But I get the idea of trying to show some lightness and some, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The chase sequence was a pretty neat chase sequence.
Yeah.
That happens after that. I like the blending in this. They did a good job in this of blending in the humor where I thought the original trilogy got it in.
Mm-hmm.
You saw. I even felt you saw enough of it in Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. There were some funny moments in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But some of the humor blend in is kind of funny. Like the, you know, they can fly now. They can fly now. it's funny moments.
Some of my favorite stuff is, okay, so I watch a video series on YouTube called What Culture. You ever check them out?
No, I haven't seen that.
Basically, like a bunch of English dudes that do film commentary or comic book commentary.
Oh,
they do
Brits?
Commentary on wrestling and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Kind of
so
cool.
So they're Brits, so they sound smarter than us.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So it could be easier to assimilate the information that way. But one of the things that I just saw a video literally yesterday that they debuted that was basically facts and Easter eggs and things about the Star Wars continuity that are confirmations on how all of these things work.
Yeah.
And it is a mind blow.
Okay.
As far as the big thing is like the force power stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
But one of the main things, I mean, we might as well get into the major plot points at this point, right?
Because
there's some
killer
stuff.
So you're talking about the force healing, right?
Not just that.
The force
training. First off, force healing, force what?
The force draining.
Force draining, force healing, and it explains why the Jedi in these film continuities would die after they did something huge.
Because they were expending
Luke's
their force energy.
Projection. They were using all of it. The difference between why the Sith survive and
they
the
hold
Jedi
on to
die
it.
Is no. It's because they suck the life force out of somewhere else
in
order to maintain it.
Okay,
you have to steal life in order to create it.
No, for instance, there is the theory that the reason that Padme died at the end of episode 3 mm-hmm. is that Darth Sidious, the Emperor, Palpatine, was actually siphoning because there was some kind of a connection.
Yeah.
Probably, interestingly enough, I haven't heard it said this way, but this is the way I'm thinking of it. The Force connection was not between Anakin and Padme. I firmly believe that the Force connection was between Anakin and Luke and Leia, because Luke and Leia were the Force sensitives and Padme was not.
I thought that you're talking the Force. Do you mean the Force connection or the dyad?
The dyad's a whole different thing. I don't think Luke and Leia weren't a dyad and Anakin was not with Luke and Leia.
No.
But the fact that they were all Force sensitive and then connected by being parents, which is another theory I have about it.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that Anakin is the parents of these two, so there's an extra connection there.
Uh-huh.
The theory is that it's just that Palpatine is siphoning Padme's life essence to keep Anakin alive until he can be put in the suit.
Okay.
I believe that if that is the case, then I believe it was due to Anakin's connection to Luke and Leia, not to Padme, because Padme wasn't anything connected to the Force other than being a living being.
Yeah.
Now as far as the fact that it is a unique situation of having a person with children that were Force sensitive as well, the Jedi had implemented the kind of rule that Jedi adherents, people that were Jedi, were not allowed to marry, not allowed to have kids, not allowed to do these things, possibly because by doing so, you increase the Force abilities and the connection between them.
Okay.
Which is why, for instance, the Night Sisters of Dathomir, of the planet Dathomir, were exceptionally strong in the Force.
Mm-hmm.
They actually would find men that were Force sensitive and have children with them to, and it was a matriarchal society,
to increase the power of the force. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
By the way, Darth Maul and his brother, Savage Opress, were both from Dathomir.
Darth Maul had a brother.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, you're telling me shit that I do not know.
Savage Opress, he was in the Clone Wars series.
Okay.
Voiced by Clancy Brown.
Why do I know that name?
Because you know him as Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob SquarePants. You also know him as the Kurgan from Highlander.
Oh, yes. Cool. All right.
And many, many, many other things.
Fun.
But anyway... That's where I think that connection is. And again, the theory is that Padme died because her life essence, her force essence,
right,
was moved into Anakin to keep him alive long enough to put him in the suit.
Gotcha.
So what were they talking about? The fact that
one of the major things was that there are certain force powers that are so draining that they would kill the user.
Yeah.
Okay. Such as the force projection is one of them, which is why it killed Luke. Another one is the ability to manipulate or work with the dead. So the theory stands.
That's why there's a couple of things, that's why the issue with Kylo
and with Han, right? Here's what goes on. A lot of people were interpreting, and I think you were interpreting this as well, is that Leia gives up her life in order to transmit her life essence and change the mind of Kylo Ren in the film. One of the things that she does.
Oh, I didn't think about that. You think she's the projection?
No.
She creates the projection of Han.
Yes, but I think it's more than that. I think it's more than that. I think she actually brings Han back to talk to Kylo. What she's doing at that time is holding Han's metal in her hand. And it's Han's metal
that
goes to Chewie.
Holy crap, I did not even think about that.
Yeah, Chewie gets the metal. It's Han's metal from episode 4.
Look at my arm.
All goosebumpy.
Oh my God! I knew that Chewie got the medal, and it's an actual conversation with the ghost
of Han Solo that turns Kylo.
Nice. Well, it also is what Rey does. So we'll jump into that moment. There's other stuff that happened between then. I will admit, one of the first moments I went, "Holy shit!" in the theater,
right?
Like outwardly said, "Holy shit!" was when she was at that desert planet.
Yeah.
When I love the moment with the lightsaber. They're in the cave. Poe's got the little flashlight. She turns on her lightsaber, and he just kind of looks down at the flashlight. Funny moment.
Right.
Great little joke, total
dick joke.
You see the force healing happen there with that little snake thing. But then the moment
that was cool. That was super cool. I thought that was way cooler than what it could have turned out to be.
It turned out great. But the holy shit moment was the transport flying away. I already knew, by the way, Chewie wasn't on the transport. I knew that. Because I knew this is the type of thing that they throw you.
Yeah.
Okay? But the transport's up. She's trying to pull it down.
Kylo's trying to pull it down.
Also awesome the fact that I didn't know that when you see the preview of that scene where Kylo Ren's TIE fighter, it's skimming across the ground coming at Rey,
right,
and Rey flips over it. You see her flip over it in the previews, right?
Right.
But nothing more. I thought, oh, no, that's not really Kylo Ren. This is a training thing because Kylo Ren would be shooting at her. And then it actually is Kylo Ren in the movie,
yeah,
and she lightsabers off one of the foils, one of the wing foils.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap.
Yeah, that was cool. I love how they made that happen. They showed it in a preview, but they didn't give away everything, even though they used almost every single shot in
the entire thing. Only other shot that they add is a shot of Kylo's face, because otherwise that's the only thing that they add, and then the chopping off the thing. But when she's reaching for that transport and trying to force pull it down, and he's reaching for it, trying to push it away, basically,
mm-hmm,
and then she lightnings it, and it's like I'm enough of a guy that knows my Star Wars that like Force Lightning. I've played the Force Unleashed games. Force Lightning is a dark side power.
Yes,
and she Force Lightnings it, and it's like, oh damn,
yeah,
we got some shit going on.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest. Yeah, that's one of the biggest reveals, and she's like, wait, what the hell is that?
I was like, oh damn, she dark side. And then even Kylo Ren's like, oh damn, she dark side. And so they get away and they do that. They do that thing. They go through, let's get into 3PO's brain. Babu Frick, man.
Who doesn't love Babu Frick? All right. Yeah. Babu Frick was cool, but personally, like nothing has beat the Porgs yet in the newer films. See, nothing's beat the Porgs. Personally, I think the, There's one scene where the Porgs beat out Babu Frick. Okay, Babu Frick.
You're talking
is
the
great.
Cooking scene.
The cooking scene is okay, funny as hell.
That is hilarious.
The cooking scene was great.
But that
brought them to like Ewok status.
I get
man.
That. By the way, the scene where they're heading to where Babu Frick is, that's where Kevin Smith has his cameo. He's in the scene in that city.
Yes.
He's blink and you miss him. You have no idea it's Kevin Smith.
Right.
But he's in there.
I was looking for him and I didn't know exactly what he looked like.
Yeah.
But I saw John Williams, damn yeah. it. That was great.
I remember seeing
him. He gets a close-up shot. I was like, yes, finally.
I remember seeing him. I'm like, I know that old dude. Because that's as they're entering Babu Frick's place, I'm like, I know that old dude.
Yep.
Who the hell is that old dude? God, I know who that is. And then like afterwards, I was reading stuff about him. I'm like, holy shit, that was Johnny Williams.
Yep.
All right, he needs to get in there.
The beard, there he is.
Yeah. He needs to get in there. And I loved the sequence. Here's the thing: I love some of the setups, right?
Right,
because they set up the sequence where they get up to the Rey and Finn and all of them get up to the Star Destroyer, right? Mm-hmm. And Kylo comes down to the planet at this planet where Babu Frick is.
Yeah, for sure.
You have the fun moment with the two stormtroopers.
Yeah.
You know, we're so glad you're here. We're so relieved. Fun moment there. But then you have the fight, the kind of fight and discussion between Rey and Kylo.
Yeah.
With this whole Force dyad thing where they're connected.
Yeah.
And I love the way they connected the two places. As the camera moved, you saw the background of one place and the background of another.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that they set something up in here.
Yeah.
They set something up for the fact that they'd already set it up before in Last Jedi with the water.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that from one of these locations to the other, things could move. Objects could move.
Yeah.
You could affect objects on different. They set this up. Funny enough, they did an even bigger setup of it in The Last Jedi, that you could move objects with the Force.
I thought that was pretty established for a while.
But anyway, moving on.
The level of the what they're doing in this, though,
yeah.
that was.
That was brought
up to an nth degree, though.
So you have that. That was great. That sequence was the sequence of her even escaping from the hangar bay.
Yeah,
was a wonderful sequence.
Yeah,
you get to another moon of Endor, not the forest moon, but another moon of Endor.
I thought that was great too. I didn't think about that either.
Because Endor is a gas giant.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the wreckage of the Star Destroyer or the Death Star, second Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the wreckage of the second Death Star, finds the throne room.
Yeah.
Finds a door off the throne room where she has a dark side vision of herself, which was awesome as hell.
Yeah.
Awesome dark side vision. Then she has the fight inside the throne room and then along the wreckage of the Death Star,
mm-hmm,
with Kylo Ren. And remember how I told you there were a couple of things I wanted to see in Star Wars movies?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see some Eternal Lightsaber on into somebody. I wanted to see some, which happened.
Yeah.
And happened in all the movies, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see...
Somebody force stop a lightsaber swing,
and then I wanted to see somebody swinging a lightsaber, turn it off when somebody else went to block, and then turn it back on into somebody. Well, we didn't get to see the last one, but we did get to see the force stop of the lightsaber blades. Oh my god, that was
cool!
Awesome.
I like how it was one and then the other one. So you knew they were equivalent power. Yeah,
and then you have Leia dying, which was, I mean, I know she had to die in the movie.
It had to happen.
She had to die in the movie, but at the same time, it's still, my princess was gone.
It was heartbreaking, man.
And then you know what
got me more than anything was that R2 was the one that watched her die.
Yeah, well, he had to be. He had to be. And then you have that moment of she's dying. And you think about the fact R2 was like her mom's droid. You know, think about that. Mm-hmm. R2 was her mom's droid.
Yeah.
So, like, he watched over her mom. He watched over her until her end. Sadness. But then you have my second holy shit moment, which is her, Rey, stabbing Kylo Ren in the chest with the lightsaber. It's like, what the fuck just happened? We're not even near the end of the movie.
I thought and the
what
coolest...
The, what the hell?
And the whole time, you're sitting there watching the scene. You're watching it happen going... Oh shit, what just went down? As much as you, like,
yeah.
The look on your face matches hers.
Yeah.
Because she realizes, oh god, what have I done?
Yeah.
I can't
she's
do
just
this.
Reacting out of her
and
anger.
And you know, reacting out of anger. The pacing was fantastic because you're waiting. Force heal him. You've already shown that you can do it.
Yeah.
Just force heal him. And that's the first thing that pushes him right off the cliff into flipping sides.
And
it was huge.
She force heals him, and then the line.
And just
the line afterwards. Mm-hmm. I wanted to grab Kyle, or I wanted to grab Ben's hand.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
holy shit. So that happens, and you're like, she takes his TIE fighter. And it's like, what the hell is going on with all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the return of Han Solo in the Force Vision.
Yep.
And the moment that I told you I didn't understand the implication of it the first time that I heard it, because I was listening to dialogue.
Yeah.
The second time I saw it, I understood the implication, and I'm sitting there the second time in theater with my son right next to me, mm-hmm. and I am bawling in that moment. Because first of all, I did notice that it was roughly the same conversation as in Force Awakens
I noticed it was line for line. It hit line for line up to a point, and I was like,
pretty much did it. And then you have the moment where he's just Kylo's just got that look on his face. He's still Kylo, not quite Ben at that point.
Right.
Not quite back to Ben. He's got that look on his face. He's almost about to cry. And his father just says two words. He just says, I know. And it's like, that's him. That's how Han says, I love you. That's what he's saying. His dad is saying, I love you to him. And that's like the moment.
Yep.
And you're like, holy crap. And the whole story between Kylo's whole story at that point has its movement.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's such level of beauty. More importantly, the fact that when we find out the truth, which had just found out in the movie for sure, that Rey is the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice switch over from the original, or from the prequel trilogy, the third movie of the prequel trilogy, a Palpatine turns a Skywalker to the dark side. Third movie of the original trilogy, a Palpatine tries, and the Skywalker doesn't, and then the other Skywalker turns back to good.
Yeah.
The end of this, a Palpatine turns a Skywalker to good.
Yeah.
And it's just again, the echoes of things is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. The way that is done is pretty damn brilliant.
And then you have the whole fleet heading towards Exegol to fight off these. Admittedly, I didn't like the idea that there was a shit ton of these Star Destroyers.
I was that part was that was a little too Deus Ex Machina to me, like right out of nowhere.
Crap! Look at the Star Destroyers.
Where are you keeping all of these
under the planet? Apparently.
That was a little too.
It was a little much.
That was a little much. And then on top of that, seeing every one of the ships from like practically all the series,
including the ship Serenity from Firefly apparently one of the ships in there. Yeah, probably thrown in as an Easter egg type of thing.
That's funny.
But the ghost from Rebels is there.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that Syndulla is still alive, for those of you who know Rebels.
Well.
But, ships from everywhere. I loved the Wedge Antilles cameo. He's a gunner on the Falcon with Lando.
Yeah.
Consider, especially teaming him up with Lando. I mean, the last time he went into battle with Lando, it turned out pretty well for them.
Right.
You know, two of them took out a Death Star, you know what I'm saying? So he'd be the guy you'd want on guns with you if you're coming back in. I admit I didn't like the little scene where you find out that Carrie Russell is still alive and Babu Frick is there, just because it's kind of cheesy.
That's...
It has that cheesy element, but still, it's Babu Frick. Yeah! Babu Frick is awesome. Screw porgs. Admittedly, porgs are nice because you can eat them, but Babu Frick is awesome. And then you have
they're
the whole
cute because you can eat them. They're like a Cornish game hen,
kind of,
or a quail.
Then you have the whole denouement of the whole fight at with the Emperor. Rey confronting the Emperor, confronting the fact that it's her grandfather.
Yeah,
and then Ben, because he's no longer Kylo, showing up.
Right.
So much has been said about the sweater type shirt that he's wearing, but whatever.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of comment on that's his good boy sweater. yeah. but Ben encounters the Knights of Ren, I hate the fact we glossed over it, but the Knights of Ren were brought back into this movie and were seen. And they've been covered heavily in the comic books, by the way.
Oh, they were.
The comics that are talking about the fall of Ben Solo into Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm.
The Knights of Ren, in fact, Luke Skywalker and Ben Solo encounter the Knights of Wren while Ben is still his apprentice.
Okay.
But anyway, the fact of sending of Rey putting her hand behind her head and sending the lightsaber over
the ability
to Kylo,
to transfer solid matter. solid objects between two separate force sensitive people,
that's
got to be the dyad. That's what I'm thinking. And the dyad was shown to exist, especially being the fact that the two of them could have conversations with each other.
Yeah, they have a connection.
And they legit have a full fight where one of them doesn't even know where the other one is located.
Yeah.
They legit have a solid fight between them until an object is affected that's easy to tell. That's nuts.
Well, it's great showing up. And then the moment in that fight, in fact, there's a moment earlier on the Star Destroyer when he's still Kylo, where General Hux is talking to him, and he puts up one index finger, kind of puts a finger up in Hux's face.
Yeah.
Kind of shut him up.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment in this fight with the Knights of Wren when he gets the lightsaber. He pulls his hand down from behind his head, has the lightsaber, and just kind of shrugs.
Yeah.
Both of those moments were actually things that Adam Driver put in the movie.
That sounds
himself.
Like a Han Solo moment, though.
They are.
They're Han Solo moments, specifically.
The shrug is a callback to Return of the Jedi when they're on Endor and Han leads the stormtroopers to the bunker. And he just kind of, the Ewoks and all these
Ewoks
things
like
pop
corner
up,
him, yeah.
And he just kind of shrugs at him like, hey, sorry, guys.
Ambushed. That was great.
And then the finger thing is something that Han Solo did regularly to people.
Harrison Ford always points his finger in their face.
Funny enough, this is a Harrison Ford acting thing. He does it in almost all of his movies.
That's great.
But Adam Driver specifically put those in to try to show that more and more of Ben was coming out. More and more of his Solo heritage was coming out.
Cool.
And so
that's a good call.
You have the fight, you have the Emperor sucking the force energy from the dyad, from both Ben and
from both of
Rey,
them, and healing immediately
from it because of the power of their connection. Then you have Ben thrown into a hole in the ground
and coming back.
Well, that happens afterwards. Then you have Rey facing the Emperor. And I believe you're the one who said it to me.
Oh, yeah. She Mace Windu's his ass.
It's a Mace Windu.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is it's so descriptive of the Jedi and so much of a Jedi thing.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't attack him. She just stands in defense.
Yeah.
She doesn't attack
him. She doesn't
at
kill
any point.
Palpatine. Palpatine kills Palpatine.
Palpatine kills him. Well, even if she had killed Palpatine, it would technically be Palpatine killing Palpatine. But...
Well, right, but
Sheev kills Sheev.
Cool.
Because for those of you who don't know, Emperor Palpatine, his real first name is Sheev. His name is Sheev Palpatine.
Sheev Palpatine.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that was something that I thought was a really great way of... The first thing I thought when it was going to be this ritualistic thing that she agrees to do, like, she couldn't kill him. Because then it would fulfill that... And it would cause the dark twist
of the Sith basically moving into
part of the agreement is like in order to save everybody that's just being completely murdered up above their heads, she finally agrees to do it, and so she has to kill him to transmit that Sith.
But instead,
energy back.
Instead, she ends up blocking it with one saber and then a second saber. And funny enough, whose sabers is she using?
I believe she's using Anakin's and Luke's. Is that correct?
Anakin's and Leia's.
That's right.
Which there is a reveal that Leia had a saber at one point. You get a short scene on the forest moon of Endor.
Yeah.
Back right after Return of the Jedi of Luke and Leia training, and you do get some computer.
By the way, that face mapping was freaking insane.
Good face mapping.
That was about damn time that Disney got that down.
Well, I don't know.
Because it was super Uncanny Valley and like all of the Star Wars
Tarkin
stories.
Tarkin wasn't bad.
I thought that there could have been much more done.
There could have been.
You know what it is, man? I bet you
Tarkin wasn't bad.
Have you seen deepfake videos yet?
Actually, yes, I have. But actually,
I bet you there's got to be some implementation of that.
No, what happened with those two shots?
Yeah.
The reason those two work and Tarkin and Leia from Rogue One didn't work.
Well, it could be the lighting because it's super dark in the scene.
No.
What?
Those face shots were actual face shots taken from extra footage from Return of the Jedi. These are outtakes and extra footage that were done for Return of the Jedi. They literally took the physical faces. That's why they set the scene up to where the actors that were in the costumes would match the physical placement of Luke and Leia.
Right.
And then actually literally pulled the faces from those outtakes from the extra film footage from Return of the Jedi and put the faces on. That's why it works so
well.
So you notice actually, they're not talking. They're not saying anything. It is actually Mark Hamill's face and Carrie Fisher's face on these doubles.
Wow.
From previous filming stuff from Return of the Jedi. So it matches perfectly.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how they got it so perfect.
Wow. That's very well done.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
I am very impressed.
But she's using Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber, which went down to Luke, and Leia's lightsaber. She's using the Skywalker lightsabers.
Cool.
So the Skywalker lightsabers helped in the hands of a Palpatine help defeat the Sith.
Cool, man.
So in many ways, all the prophecy things do come true. The Skywalker line, especially the Force sensitive Skywalker line, which starts with Anakin and ends with Ben.
Yeah.
This line is what brings down the fall of the Sith. This line is what stops the Sith.
Wow.
And it's all the machinations that were involved in it. So you're right. It basically kills Rey to have that happen. And you're right. Ben does climb back up the hole.
Yeah.
Finds Rey. And
there's another theory that came out that actually stated that because Ben climbed back from being shot off by Palpatine originally, that Mace Windu also survived his fall.
It's possible. There's been theories that he may have survived.
He just disappeared into nothingness. Like, you have no idea where he went or what happened to him. So,
but then Ben picks up Rey, kind of cradles her, heals her from death, it seems like.
She was dead.
And has...
she was dead.
I think one of the best moments, other than the Han moment, which I think is still one of the best things I've ever seen in a film, period, one of the best moments is to see Adam Driver in this character, for as long as he's been in this character over these three movies, angry and bitter all the time. He has a moment where he smiles. And that one moment is smiling in that character. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole different character. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, that's honestly, I thought that was a more, to be completely honest, I probably thought that was a more dynamic turn.
Yeah.
Just from one extreme to another. It was a more dynamic turn than even the actors who portrayed Darth Vader could have
given. Oh, definitely.
It's a whole different... It was a whole different experience, and it was very, very well mapped out.
Yeah.
I'm a little weird.
You didn't like the kiss.
The Disney kiss, man. I was like, why'd they have to do that? I didn't think it was fully necessary.
But it seemed more
like a thank you than anything.
I think it was more of a just like, welcome back to who you are, and thank you. And then also, again, the connection that they have, but more of a thank you. The fact that, you know, she knew that he used the Force to bring her back to life.
Right.
And then I love the fact that not only does he die immediately at that moment, but his body disappears because, as you said, he used basically whatever energy in the Force he had left to bring her back to life.
Right.
And that was too much of an expenditure on his body.
Yeah. And that seemed to be kind of a theme in the more recent trilogy fact that you could expend that, but it would bring you to another.
And I
would say that's the next plane of existence kind of a deal.
Yeah.
The same. It's almost like being struck down, you know?
Yeah. No, I get you on that.
Yeah.
And that's, and I mean, the thing is, when it first.
Are they surrendering to the Force?
Yes, basically. Basically, they surrender their essence to it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. When I first saw that, I was a little mad. I didn't like the idea that she was a Palpatine. I thought it would have been just better if she was a Force creation like Anakin was.
Yeah.
I also was mad that Ben was the one that died. I wish it was Rey that died to have the Skywalker line carry on. But then,
to have Ben
but
continue,
then here's the
yeah.
thing. Here's the thing. One of the things that was said about this set of movies is this was the Skywalker saga. In fact, the Lego video game that just came out is the Skywalker saga. And for you to call something the Skywalker saga with that kind of a definitive answer, you can't really have any real Skywalkers left. And if you think about it,
that's what happens.
Ben had to sacrifice to make this really be the Skywalker saga.
Yeah.
And the fact that that Rey takes the name Skywalker after, I'm good with that. I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too.
And so, you know, it's looks like I just want to say we're probably not going to talk about The Mandalorian because we talk forever about Rise of Skywalker.
You knew we would.
I knew we would. But I can say that first time viewing, I wasn't overly happy with it. I had some issues. Second time viewing, man, they did everything they needed to complete it. Make it a complete, especially with episodes 1, 2, and or episodes 7, 8 with it. 7, 8, 9 make their own trilogy, just like 1, 2, and 3 do, just like 4, 5, and 6 do.
Yeah.
And as a full saga, all I can say is I can't wait for the damn thing to come out so I can do a 9 movie watch.
Right.
Because I'm so, again, after the second time, there are holes, but there are holes in every single one of the Star Wars movies.
Right.
As far as a narrative that completes the story and makes it feel right, I think they did the right thing, and I think it came out perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you seem to agree, too, not being the big Star Wars guy. So you're able to view it with a less cynical eye than I am, and that's good.
I am. Well, here's the thing, man. When I walk into a movie theater and I go to see a movie, I walk in expecting nothing. And there's a lot of people that hold on to their expectations of what they thought this series was supposed to be. That's the mistake.
Sometimes it can be, yeah.
This is in a new pair of hands. You have no idea what's going to go on. You need to take what you know and understand that it's there, it existed, throw what you expect out the window.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
and you will be a lot happier with what
the fun
what
thing
happens.
Is, this still hits a lot of the expectations in my mind. It still hits a lot of the stuff that I was hoping for, looking for, and yet is still its own thing.
Yeah.
So we do definitely need to talk about The Mandalorian at another time, because The Mandalorian actually goes back to some of the original roots that George Lucas was looking for when he made the Star Wars movies, specifically Japanese cinema. There's even an episode that is a full-on Seven Samurai, or for you American audiences who don't have any culture. Magnificent Seven. There's a full-on episode in Mandalorian that is basically that type of episode. It is a Magnificent Seven Samurai episode. But there's also a lot of connection to the spaghetti westerns of Sergio Leone. I mean, seriously, even the music kind of has a feel to it like that.
Nice.
So it's definitely got that kind of, it's so connected to the original idea that Lucas had for it, and yet it's its own wonderful thing. It's also something that's a big issue for me. It's violent without being graphic with its violence, which is nice.
True.
But anyway, we're going to end for today. Mike, where can people listen to us?
Well, y'all can listen to us at thezenialchronicles.com or zenchron.com. Speaking of Zenchron, find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Zenchron, or both, or Facebook/Zenchron or whatever. It's spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. As far as the podcasts themselves, we're kind of as everywhere as we can be right now, always looking for other places. Right now we're on Spotify, we're on TuneIn, we are on Google Podcast. There is a way to get us on Apple Podcast as well. I'm not sure if we're fully officially there, but we're trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
And there's some other stuff too. We're trying to get on iHeart Radio, I think.
By the way, if there are any other places where you think that you'd like to be able to listen to us on, please send us a message through Facebook.
Yeah, let us know if there's another avenue that we could take.
Or you can send us a message through the most easy way to watch and listen to our stuff, YouTube, which has our entire archive on it. So if you check out YouTube, you'll see our whole archive, and you'll be able to leave us any kind of messages. We do respond.
Yeah.
We encourage messages. In fact, for this one, tell me what you thought of Rise of Skywalker if you saw it.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you haven't seen it, hopefully you haven't heard the second part of this podcast. But anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.